you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Talking Monkeys, the official podcast of your favorite show, 12 Monkeys. I'm your host, Clark Wolf, and I have a wonderful panel of guests today. I'm so excited to talk about this week's episode, Bodies of Water. It was a crazy one. Let me introduce them. We have Mr. Sean Tretta.
Hello.
We have Mr. Aaron Stanford.
Hello.
And we have Mr. Terry Metalis.
Hello.
I'm so happy to be back with you guys. The season is like up and out and it's exciting.
Yeah, it's crazy to watch.
It is. And Twitter. Well, and the fans have been really reacting positively to our little shenanigans here on the couch, which
it's
is nice.
To know people are listening.
Yeah, it is. Send us cheese plates and pizza and snacks. Okay, so let's go ahead and just dive into this episode. We start in 2016 with Olivia, and she's at the altar, and she has a little trip. We realize here, or she realizes, that time has been altered, and she absolutely does not take kindly to that. I'm really enjoying how we're seeing Olivia kind of grow this season. We're getting more of her. She's not just this nefarious, you know, tall woman or striking woman
striking
as she's
woman,
billed.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
we're going to get a lot more later, too.
I'm very excited about this. I'm excited to see her unfold. And so in this moment, though, she realizes time has been altered. You know, she says this was not the plan. And I was curious, you know, in this scene, the witness is kind of like, he doesn't spell out slow your roll, but he's kind of like, it's cool, don't worry. But she is not taking kindly to this. And so my question was kind of like, why do you think it is, or why was it that Olivia is obviously having such a hard time with this? But if the witness isn't having such a hard time with this, why is she reacting so negatively?
Well, I think what's going on is that, Olivia had been sort of the curator of this first cycle, and every bit of it had sort of gone to plan except for this thing that Cole did, which is the Ramses situation, sort of thrown everything into chaos. And for her, it's like she's lived her whole life believing that all these steps that she was going to take were predetermined, and so that they were carved in stone. And then she's realized, wow, everything in my life could possibly be a lie. And I think the witness is more of a chess player. He kind of rolls with things and understands that some of, you know, time evolves and that there's some give and take with these things. And she's not taking kindly to that because that's not what she was told.
Yeah, I think he changed the gospel on her. Mm-hmm. And she's having a crisis of faith.
Well, I think it's funny. That's actually, as you were explaining, I was thinking, you know, if you're brought up to be so devout to anything, whatever that may be, you know, I would understand if, you know, the leader or the, you know, the God for lowercase or uppercase changes the plan, that would be kind of really hard to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's, you know, freaking out, and, you know, she's been tasked with all this responsibility, and she's literally kind of lost at this point. And it's got to be really frustrating to then have, you know, to go in there for answers and get this very cryptic sort of answer. Like,
and she's, the witness is telling her to do something she doesn't quite, you know, she's preparing Dr. Rayleigh for something, but she sees Rayleigh and Cole as a threat. But the witness is like, hands off.
Right.
Trust me, I got a plan. So it's, you know, we're starting to see the cracks in Olivia. And certainly by the end of the episode, a major shift for her power, you know. But we should talk about in that scene, there is a major Easter egg.
There's a major Easter egg in there, but
that's all we'll say.
Okay.
The scene in the house there's a little hint for something down the line.
All right.
I mean, in this one in particular, there's that scene, and then the scene later on, which I'm sure we'll talk about, where it's like, if you're going to freeze frame an episode, this is the one to do it, because there's a ton of stuff.
Well, that's something that's fun about the show in general, is that there's always so many Easter eggs all over the place. But okay, so listeners, that's your monkeys who are listening. That is your that's your task, is to tweet at us your theories about what the Easter egg is in the house. Because I need help figuring it out myself. All right, so the Pallid Man appears after, you know, Olivia comes to, and he's ordered to find Cassie. Meanwhile, back in 2044, Jones and Cole are outside Jennifer's tent and, you know, being surrounded by the daughters. And Jennifer says that she will only speak with Cole. So Cole goes in, and we figure out that, you know, and we kind of are reminded, okay, here's what the messenger's goals are. They are going to go through time, they're going to destroy primaries, and they're going to create paradoxes to collapse time. That is what we are led to believe is their current goal. And as a result of that, Jennifer is not safe. And so, you know, she had this great line, by the way, of "my army's better than theirs." I loved that.
Yeah.
That was
prettier too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is that in there? Prettier too?
It was in there. I think.
I don't know if it made it. I don't think it made it, because I would have written that down for sure. So she tells Cole that he needs to find another primary, but she also says that Cassie needs to go and not him. And I found that super interesting. I mean, obviously, we figure out why, or we're mm-hmm. led to believe that we know why.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for Aaron, for you, like, you know, when Cole gets this, does Cole want another mission in that moment? And then it's kind of like, no, but not you. She's got to go. And it's kind of like, all right, well.
I think at this point he trusts her prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that she is operating on a different level than anybody else. And if she says it has to be Cassie, I think he trusts her. It has to be Cassie. You know, he at this point very much wants to be actively involved. You know, he's very much in the fight at this point. You've seen that he's taken more of a leadership position and you know, sort of, you know, become very, very gung ho. But you know, if that's the way it has to be, that's the way it has to be.
Mm-hmm. So these are our orders. This is what our plan is. And meanwhile, though, you know, Deacon. So we have this scene almost immediately after with Deacon, which sets up a huge thing in this episode. So Deacon had sent some men out. Only one comes back. Deacon's obviously suspicious. Like, how did you, the weakest of the pack, make it out of all of this? And basically what we learn is that the foreman has found the team that went out, and he wants Deacon. Essentially. So Deacon, in cold blood, shoots this guy in the head. Ramsey watches this.
As he does.
Like you do. Right. Ramsey watches this and really reacts badly to it. So it's a couple things. You know, when Todd was here, we were talking in a previous episode about, can we trust Deacon? Like, you know, he seems to be functioning really well. He's getting along with everybody in the facility. And yet, we can't forget the Deacon from season one, who is crazy and volatile, and this seemed like a reminder of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the frog and the scorpion story, you know? A scorpion is a scorpion and always will be, and you cannot trust it.
Right.
Absolutely. And Sean, did you have any, like, thoughts on this?
I think, like, Deacon is not just, like, a product of the environment, but he operates very well. Like, he knows the rules of the future of 2043, 2044. And in essence, he's right about, you know, shooting this guy in his way.
Sure.
Well, and
I mean, these are bad guys. He says that later to her. He's like, let me just tell you about this guy. He was not, none of my guys are good guys.
Right.
These guys aren't great. And if I can smell any kind of betrayal, I got to put them down. Makes sense.
I think
I'm with him.
I think we've talked about this on the show before, but, like, to use Walking Dead terms, I was Team Shane. I was all about, like, I thought Shane had the right idea, you know, because, look, at the end of the day, you got to survive. This is survival. It's kill or be killed. And, you know, and by the way, if Clem, the man who's killed, the character name, if he's making deals behind their back, well, that messes up everybody's game. So I think Deacon has a point. However, Ramsey and Cole do not necessarily think that he has a point.
Well, I think they're thinking they have the same mentality that he does. You know, just like Terry said, if he smells betrayal, he puts the threat down. And we know Deacon. We have a long history with him. We've experienced. You know, we've seen what he's capable of. We've seen what makes him tick. And I think we know it's only a matter of time before he stings us. You know. And better to hit him first before he hits us.
Yes, and I'm really excited to actually talk about that a little bit later, what ultimately ends up happening. So at this moment, though, Cassie's going to splinter. Deacon and Cole are saying goodbye to Cassie, and that was hilarious. That scene was really funny. Just, you know, one of the things I love about this show is it finds these little moments of comedy and plays them really, really well. Mm-hmm. And that scene was fun. For you guys, and, you know, it was very quick, obviously, but the kind of one-upping of, okay, see you later, okay, bye, no, but I say bye last, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Was there improv there? Was it kind of just like, you know, on this, or was it
no,
sort of
I
like
think
those beats?
A good chunk of it was Kristen's original script, the writer, Kristen Rydell. And then, you know, I think the idea was to do the anti-splinter sequence, because we always do these grandiose splinter sequence, a crane shot, and give the word, initiate, you know. But this was like, what if she's splintering while they're bickering at each other? Just seemed like a really fun new way to do that thing.
Well, and it also kind of puts it into perspective that this is a little bit routine at this point.
Yeah.
And which is good. Like, we should be calling that out a little bit. You know, Cassie isn't like deep in thought and preparing herself. She's rolling her eyes before Jones hits the button, which is right. kind of amazing. Yeah.
It's a great example of how we're able to have a little more fun this season because all the characters have been fleshed out. And it's a great little moment of, like, you know, petty jealousy in the middle of this very, very high stakes situation. You know, the mission to save the world, and it's two guys having a pissing match over a gal.
And the time Jesus joke.
Yeah, that was a great line. So tell me about this.
So last year there was not a very good, in our opinion, picture. Of it was a promotional picture of Cole in the time machine, but it looked like
the time machine beam was like a halo around him.
Yes, I know exactly the photo you're talking about.
Like, well, yeah, also it happened multiple times. That's the one that like that we remember. But we had multiple photo sessions, and inevitably, at some point, every person who came in to take a publicity photo got me in that time travel chair, and at some point they all had the revelation that, oh, if you shoot it from this angle, it looks like a halo around his head.
And he has long hair and a beard. He's like Jesus.
He's time Jesus.
And just in the room, we threw that term around a lot, just jokingly, because, you know, he's the hero of our show and so far and so forth.
What
so
sacrifices
it's like,
is he going to make?
Yeah,
really good
and it was just inevitable that it was going to end up in one of these scripts at some point.
Yeah, and then Deacon was, you know, so Kristen dropped it in, and it worked.
It was great. I wrote that line down. It was really fun. So back in 2016, Jennifer Goins is having her Mary Tyler Moore moment in NYC. She's on her meds. She's happy. She's wearing pink.
This might be a good time to go to our Emily interview.
Let's do it.
Okay. I was in D.C. A couple weeks ago with Emily Hampshire, who's not here. We got a chance to talk with her, and here we go. Now, through the magic of audio editing, I'm in Washington, D.C. with Emily Hampshire.
Hi.
Hello, Emily. We're here doing the Future is Here Festival. So we're going to do this segment with Emily where we're gonna pop out and talk about all her episodes with her. Now, 205, Bodies of Water. So let's talk about, because we haven't been really able to talk about this before, but in the other podcast because you weren't around, but what it was like to do old Jennifer again, because I mean, we saw her last year in one episode, but we really kind of get to know her this year. And I thought, I mean, I have my own opinions. I mean, I personally love old Jennifer.
I've come to love old Jennifer like so much. But at the beginning, I found it hard a bit because I didn't do her as much as I did Jennifer. But also I was trying to figure out who she is in the process of doing it. And then what I realized at the end was that was all part of Jennifer's journey in a weird way. And
well, she's 30 years. She knows 30 years more than young Jennifer. And I liked that you, I mean, I thought it was amazing how just in body language you felt the 30 years and you talked slower and lower. And like, I really believe you were old. Although I do feel that old Jennifer is closer to the real Emily Hampshire.
Really?
Yeah.
What makes you say that?
Well, she's like, she's just more settled in into snacking and playing with animals.
And... well, but what's weird is when I put that makeup on, like it's a 4-hour makeup thing, which Terry's favorite joke is after I come out of makeup to be like, you gotta go back. You gotta go into. Oh, I just ruined that joke.
Yeah, the joke is, when are you getting into makeup?
Yeah, that's the joke. That's the joke. No. So it's like 4 hours of makeup, and then seeing yourself like that is so weird because they do such a good job that it's like, it really is me older. I look like my mother a bit.
The neck is really like,
yeah, everyone wants to touch my neck when I have that in there. Everyone wants to put their finger in my neck hole.
Now the turtle.
Yeah, my tortoise.
The tortoise. Let's just, for the record, explain its name. It's not an homage to, well, it became an homage, I guess, right? But it's not, it wasn't named after me. That was that
no was, and we all discovered that after
we were shooting, right?
While we were shooting, it was the tortoise's first day, and he was crawling across the bed, and then it was his first scene, and he shit the bed, literally, as they say, but literally. And then the trainer came in, the like tortoise wrangler, and was talking to him, and was like, Terry, talking to the tortoise, calling him Terry, and that's his name, is really Terry. And I bet they named him that because
that's a name of people who shit the bed. Is that where you're
going
with this?
Yeah, I was trying to do that.
Good work.
But wait, we didn't even get, you didn't even let me finish the old Jennifer thing.
So
because the thing is that like you really, a lot of the work was done for me in just that makeup. Like already I just looking at myself, I felt much calmer and kind of like I didn't give a shit about anything. Like, you know, there's this confidence that comes with being older, and I didn't care how I looked, and I didn't care what people thought of me, and I just kind of sat into that a bit more. But I was concerned a bit with, like, physicality and, like, how should I do this and stuff. And what I found on the day was that all the stuff around me helped me and made me do that. Like my wardrobe, the way they had this like intricate headpiece that was sewn into the body of it. So it made me kind of have to restrict my movement a bit. And the makeup made me restrict my face and turning my neck a bit. So all that really helped me. And you helped me a lot.
No.
Yeah, you helped me a lot. You would always.
Well, what about Sane Jennifer? Because this is the episode in which she's Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
And she's running around. Like, what was that like?
Well, I always thought of Sane Jennifer as Jennifer.
As sane as she could possibly be.
Yeah, but also I feel like all Jennifer's things are like CEO Jennifer is Jennifer's idea of what a CEO would do and be, like in the movies. And Sane Jennifer, like you even see the montage of it, is she's doing all the things sane, like really healthy people do, like yoga and taking the pills and juicing. And so I also thought it was that because, as we know in season two, Jennifer's not really like crazy in a way that medication could fix. Jennifer knows things and is connected to time and sees all these timelines, and that's what makes her crazy. So I don't think medication is going to fix that. It's kind of like pretending to be sane a bit. I don't know. It was fun.
Well, what was it? How about teaming up with Cassie finally?
That was, I honestly love working with Amanda. She's so like generous as an actor, and it's weird because Amanda is really, she's like a tough cookie, and but she's also very like maternal with me sometimes, and like, I don't know. It was, what are you laughing at? What are you laughing at?
Just, I'm just remembering.
What, when I was snacking? So I had this scene where, well, it was written into, Terry, it was written into the script.
Oh, I wonder if, I don't think it's on the DVD extras where you're snacking, because the scene became about you snacking.
Well,
the line is still in the episode where she's like, we're going to need snacks. The summer home is far away. We're going to need snacks.
Yeah.
But then there was another scene
where I was eating the snacks.
Where she's eating the snacks.
And
but you're so method.
Yeah, that I was eating them in between. In between the scene more than in the scene. And Amanda was like, Emily. Yeah, she told me to like calm down on that. I'm not going to feel well after.
But what were they? They were like,
oh, they were giant sour keys.
Oh, yeah, sour.
Which was what I requested.
Those are like Sour Patch Kids, but bigger.
But she was right. I felt so sick after. I like went crazy because when do you get a big bag of candy like that when you're an adult?
I have many memories of being on set with you, but specifically I have memories of being in the mansion, you know, from last year, which is 12 Monkeys Mansion, where you spend... you know, you went there with Olivia last season.
That's fun because we're all in this big mansion. But then that's the word of the witness. Remember the word of the witness?
Yeah, that's it. Now, let's talk about that prop. That's my favorite prop of the season. Detailed it is. It's huge.
It's an art piece, like a brilliant, brilliant art piece that I believe you stole.
In my office right now. Yeah. And people, when they come in, sit and study it and read. And look for season 3 and season 4. Spoilers.
September 23rd, 2044.
The day you die. Now, what's like playing that?
It was really interesting because I had ideas before I did it about how I would feel about that. Like, which is the biggest wrong thing to do as an actor, to like plan how you're going to feel. But I thought, of course, if you see the day you die, it would be like... make you scared or whatever. But when I saw that on the date, there was this weird, like, calming thing to it. Like, that I get to that point, that I get to 2044. I think I would have thought I didn't even make it that far. So what was great about it was that no matter what happens, I get to there. So...
Yeah, I think... Well, and you're kind of teasing a future... I mean, Jennifer's mindset in the next few episodes, younger Jennifer's mindset, which is, I make it to there, I can be fearless.
Yeah, yeah.
I can take these fuckers on.
Yeah.
Speaking of taking people on, you stabbed Olivia and threw her into a pool. What was that like?
Well, it wasn't as fun as it could have been because she was pregnant, and I didn't want to... even pretendy stab the baby.
The
But other than that, I liked it for Jennifer and pushing her in the thing, but I feel like it was just all colored with, like, don't want to do anything to Allison and the baby.
Yeah.
But...
she was okay.
She was okay, yeah. But there was... she was brave, real brave, because in that pool there was spiders, so
yeah. Oh god. In fact, there is footage of her lying on that pool, the empty pool where Palamon's talking to her, and you can see a spider crawl over her.
God,
and she's deathly afraid of spiders. I told her later, she's like, oh my god, you can never show me that.
Oh my god. Oh god, that's terrible.
I guess now, the last thing is just, you know, where is Jennifer's mindset now? She knows when she's going to die. She's connected to the primaries. Like, she's kind of, like, got a little bit more fight to her now.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's exactly what you said. It's that, like, that it gives you, it's when you got nothing to lose, too, like, that freedom to be balls to the wall and do whatever you want, because you know. Well, I always think of that, like, if I found out I was going to have a terminal illness or something, it's really that's really terrible and not a good comparison, but it just makes you like, I can do anything.
Right.
And I think knowing when you're going to die and that it's like a long time away, my mindset as Jennifer is like, yeah, I can do anything.
And that's, okay, so that's where we'll leave it. I think that's a good preview of 206. We'll be back with a special Emily snapshot then.
When do I get to ask questions?
Yeah, you can ask questions in the next one. How about that?
Okay.
And just so you know, Emily could not face me during this interview. She actually has her back to me because she would laugh.
Yeah, because why? Because your face.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, everyone. So welcome back. That was the lovely Miss Emily Hampton. I need to meet Emily one day.
I think
never
she's in
met
town.
Her.
We'll get her.
Well, yeah. Maybe she can bring us a cheese plate.
She would eat the cheese plate. She would not make it here.
So back in 2044, we have Cole. You know, Cole has this conversation with Jones. Look, you need to kick Deacon out. Like, this is not going to fly. But, you know, Jones is kind of, she's not going to do it. And again, as we discussed a little bit earlier, I mean, maybe she's kind of, is her mentality sort of like our mentality? Like, look, he did the right thing, or?
I think she thinks it's a necessary evil, right?
Yeah. I mean, she's got to make sure that no one else comes in and takes over, you know.
They're the muscle now.
Yeah.
They are the security.
That's right.
So.
I mean, they've allowed Ramsay to stay, but sort of Deacon balances Ramsay out in a sense. And so there is that balance of power that's very important to her.
Also, they've lost a lot of guys at the Spearhead, you know, revolt, you know, so they do need protection.
So speaking of Ramsay, Cole and Ramsay sort of have a little bit of a powwow and they decide like, okay, there's a problem. We got to do something about it.
Yeah. So the idea for this story, actually came from, it was something, again, I was always struggled with the fact that these two are back, you know, you can't, living together in this facility, Deacon and Cole,
yes.
You know, and that Deacon is this element, like to really, we really have to shine a light on how this would play out in some way. And how do you get past it? You know, can you do that at all? So that led me down, and at the time I was watching a lot of The Shield.
Mm-hmm.
I was up in Toronto because we have Jay Carnes on who's great on The Shield. Mm-hmm. And for me it would be really cool to see Cole and Ramsay do this sort of you know, Vic Mackey, Shane Dupe, and you know, do this ballsy hit, basically, you know, but like show that these guys are not softies, that they're willing to go as far as Deacon, mm-hmm. you know, and outsmart him to take him down. And so that was the idea behind it. And that maybe that would give everybody a mutual respect for each other. The fact that, it, you know, Deacon's beef is they're never willing to go there because they're too soft and they mm-hmm. ran away. You know, their beef with him is he is just an outright killer. And the mm-hmm. fact that he doesn't come back, you know, filled with venom and he's earned respect, they're kind of like at an impasse. They're not so like there's a weird level of respect for each other at the end. That was kind of the idea behind it all.
When he comes back?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, I mean, I think what that moment was about for, you know, for me in the scene, the reason they decide to kill him is because they decide that he is who he is by nature and he will never be changed and they will never be able to trust him. So better to get rid of him while they can. And in coming back the way he does and not looking to take revenge and not looking to hit them back, he proves that he is actually capable of changing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he isn't what they thought he is. And in that moment, they're able to see past it and say, hey, maybe, you know, maybe there is a chance with this guy.
Well, and for that, you know, final scene with Deacon, where he does come back, are we as an odd, because as an audience member, when I was watching it, I kind of felt like Cole and Ramsay's expression was kind of like, you know, it was this.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely wary of the fact that he's back, but they're more in awe of the fact that he survived.
Right.
That they're like, oh my God. And that really, you know, all they have to do is go, and he would just fall over. But it's more of like, where is this going?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, I think.
I was just saying, it feels like how Deacon, this is the only way Deacon compromises in a way. It's like you have to defeat him and you have to get on this very level playing field where it's like, okay, now we can, this is where bygones can be bygones. Because if I have leverage on you, you have it on me, we have a problem. But this is like, feels like it's amends in a sense.
And it felt very sincere. And my question is not because the performances didn't lead me to believe that. It's just because I personally, Clark, am a little skeptical in general. But so my question for you guys is, are we to believe that Deacon is sincere? Are we the audience? Not that their threat will not be, not that the threat is extinguished completely, but for the time being, are we to believe that that Cole and Ramsey have earned Deacon's respect?
I think to a degree. I mean, they definitely, I mean, they're never going to be,
of course,
bestest pals. But also there's a thing that happens there that Deacon, you know, he kind of gives them a window into something when he pulls that knife out and he says, this knife that the foreman had belonged to my little brother.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, there's more to Deacon than just conquering, you know, that there was a personal thing between the foreman and this guy. And you can see what that meant. So they can see that there's more to this guy than just, you know, his bit.
Yeah, his beef with the foreman is earned, you know, and it's right. like you get the sense Deacon became this guy because of a hard life of losing brothers and losing, you know, and became this hardened person because this is the way of his world.
It shows you that he's human.
Right. Yeah. And we know from the other episode that Deacon had a father,
abusive father.
And so you can, you know, quickly put together the story of Deacon taking care of his little brother out in the apocalypse for 20 years. And then what happened to his brother? Yeah. You know, what did that mean for Deacon? We have an answer for all that. We get little bits along the way in the season, but it's 12 Monkeys fucked up way of getting to know you.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. So, all right, let's go back a little bit, back to 2016. So, Jennifer and Cassie are together, and they're, you know, they've figured out that they need to go. They're trying to trigger Jennifer's visions, and the big trigger is going to be the incident at the summer house. So they go to the summer house, and Jennifer has this bedroom that is, I mean, just full
of her drawings.
And this is not only is this a big scene, you know, in terms of the characters and in terms of the show, but in the background of the scene, we have a lot of pictures.
A lot of Easter eggs.
Yeah. So you guys want to talk about that a little?
No. Well, I mean, everything in there is something. There's really nothing random in there,
no,
right?
No, it all has a point to it. Yeah, every single one of the drawings were.
And there's things that you'll recognize and things that you'll recognize later on.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So maybe there's some rewatchability to all of this.
There's a hyena face. I'll say that.
A hyena face?
Yeah.
And I don't remember if it's in this episode or not where someone says something about a hyena.
Maybe
the next episode.
Maybe coming up.
We're a bit ahead, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I know it's mentioned in either this one or next one for a fact. I know this. Okay. So, in addition to the Easter eggs and all of that, we see Cassie and Jennifer going through Jennifer's drawings and figuring out the primaries it's a very academic scene in a way. It's almost like they're in a library and they're pouring over books and maps and all of these things. And for you guys, you know, for our writers, was it ever kind of hard to, like, you know, they focus very much on Slade, or that's where we figure, you know, we really pinpoint Slade and the 70s. Yes. Think so?
Yeah.
But was it tempting for you guys to kind of like dive into any more of the primaries or the hints?
We did. I mean, it's all about screen time. I mean, we had other drawings of things for another primary
Yeah, and you kind of want to stay pretty linear getting to that 70s story because it does take a few steps. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we also in that scene have the bath stuff.
Yes.
Which we had talked about in episode two when she's like, mothers, they fill baths, they put babies in the baths, they tell them they're special. That's what she's referring to.
And then Olivia, too, back in the first season, filled a bath for her, you know, and gave her a bath. So it's all weird.
Very manipulative. Mm-hmm.
It's all the baths. Sean being fucking weird.
So while, you know, Jennifer and Cassie are doing their work, the pallid man shows up because in a previous scene, Stacy, her Jennifer's fake friend, had, you know, told them where they were going.
Stacy is, of course, named after Stacy Fung, our studio exec. And she made sure that we mentioned that on this podcast.
Well, good. Mission accomplished.
Gun lowered.
When Stacy is listening to Talking Monkeys, this is her shout out.
Yeah, we'll find out if she actually
Hi, Stacy.
The pallid man shows up. He's got a guy with him. Cassie pulls a gun. She threatens Jennifer, and pallid man's like, "You're not going to kill her." I mean, you're smart. That's a good thought, but that's not going to happen. And then ultimately, Cassie doesn't kill her.
She still has a heart.
Of course. Especially, too, I mean, in the scene of her childhood trauma.
Right.
You know. But, I mean, but did you guys ever think about taking it there? Like, leading the audience to believe, like, maybe she would shoot her in the head?
Well, I think, like, early drafts of the script, like, it was a real fear of Cole that Cassie would go and kill Jennifer.
Right.
Because there is something to doing that. You know, she was a threat for the plague, and she has this other importance. And I think we backed off that a little bit because we didn't want it to be another, like, murder mission.
Yeah.
But that's always in the back.
It's not really going to happen because she's still around in 2044. But,
that's true.
But it could. You could change the time. Yeah. I mean, there's reasons for it.
But
I think awesome, but just it feels like schmuck bait. Like, you're not going to kill.
And I mean, to be fair, Cassie was smart, too.
Love that term.
What?
I love the term schmuck bait. I love it.
It's a terrible writer's room term.
Okay. The pallid man has captured the girls, and Olivia does not seem to be getting along with the pallid man. She's not getting along with the witness either, but she's definitely not getting along with the pallid man.
That goes back from last season, too, when he got really pissed off and about not knowing as much as she did and knocked the book out of her hands and Shonen.
She was sort of willing to let him die in certain circumstances because it's like, well, all this is planned and so on and so forth. And he kind of resents that.
The internal politics.
There's a lot of politics going on in the 12 Monkeys. Okay, so Olivia sends Jennifer away and she pours the drink into, or the tea into, Cassie's mouth. And Cassie gives Olivia mad sass. That's what I wrote down. Mad sass.
Should be the name of this podcast.
Talking mad sass. That's what my autobiography will be called. But I love this scene. When we were sort of reviewing the episode before we started recording, I just love how these two women are so... they are very serious, and they mean what they're saying. And Cassie, you know, Amanda's performance, she's just relishing in it. Like, there's that little smile after she finishes talking, and she just smirks at Olivia.
Well, it's the second time, right, that she's been grabbed by Olivia and forced to drink this stuff and do this Red Forest
and
thing.
Hear this
and only, but now we see it's like, okay, we want to do this again. She's completely different from when the first time this happened.
And Olivia, as we've talked about already, is definitely losing her cool. You know, throughout this episode, it's kind of, the cracks are showing. She's unraveling a bit. And to have her, but also what I love is the line where where Olivia tells Cassie, "You're important to the witness. You are not important to me." Like, don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's just great.
Yep.
With a nice little backhand in there to boot.
Yeah. She smacks her.
Illustrate the point.
So, with that being said, meanwhile, we kind of jump over to Jennifer, and she knocks out Stacy, and she finds the word of the witness. This is probably going to be important for a little while, but what can you tell us about this now?
Well, it's very dense with spoilery information.
It is.
very dense with it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the witness's map, his roadmap of history and all these things.
The mad,
you know,
ramblings of the witness and the planner of the apocalypse, basically. It's got time coordinates, time maps, loops. It has
birthdays,
song lyrics,
death dates.
It has, you know, These Arms of Mine is the song that they dance to in episode 7 of last year. There's a monkey drawing.
Mm-hmm.
There's some musical notes. There is
lots of math as well.
And there's also a torn piece at the top right corner. What was on that?
That's a good question. So, in a way, it mirrors Jones's little setup where she's got the collage essentially trying to track everything.
Yeah.
And then this is the witness's piece. But the thing that I did notice that jumped out immediately, probably jumped out for the audience too, is Jennifer Goins' death is listed on the map. For our gentlemen who are overseeing this universe, are we to take that seriously?
I mean, well, time is in flux, so we don't know, but it's really more about the impact of what if you could see the day you're going to die? Like, what does that mean for you? What does that do for a person?
Sure.
Does that embolden you? Does that, now knowing you're not going to die for 30 years, mean like I'm going to go jump out of an airplane because I know I'll be okay? You know, what does that do for somebody? Probably drive you crazy.
But Jennifer's already crazy.
Exactly. So it's something that's going to impact her in future episodes.
And meanwhile, for Cassie, she is going into the Red Forest, and the witness for her looks like Aaron.
Aaron does appear in the vision.
Now, for our listeners, who called it? I said, we have not seen the last of him. Now, this is just a vision, to be fair.
Right.
And also, now, for me, as an audience member, because this episode a lot happens, and I think a lot is open for interpretation, you know, I am reading this as perhaps the witness looks different to everybody. Kind of like, this is just my reading of it. Like, so if I wanted to manipulate somebody in their mind, and I know about Cassie, what would be her soft spot? And probably her allegedly dead and burned up fiance, right?
It could be. But Aaron is a pretty solid candidate for witnessy.
This is the other side.
He's running for election, and
there's reasons to wear a mask with that burned face of his. There's reasons for
he's privy to time travel.
He would have a specific point of view about what needs to happen in the future, and
it's probably him.
It's probably him.
But we got to, you know, we'll have to wait and see. There are answers coming.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an interesting reveal nonetheless. So Jennifer rescues Cassie, and she confronts Olivia, and Olivia tries real hard to manipulate her with mom stuff. That's what I wrote down, with mom stuff. And then I wrote down, nope. And Jennifer stabs her, which you spoke with Emily about. So, Pallid Man, he finds Olivia. She's bleeding out. And he's kind of like, well, whatever. I'm going to let you die. And he's super disappointed in her. Okay. So, he then decides that he's going to drink the tea and go speak with the witness. And just for, maybe this is clear and I missed it, but when they drink the tea and they go into the Red Forest, Do they think that that's how they're actually talking to the witness, or they are having visions that...
I believe they are speaking to the witness. Okay. They are in communication in some way with his consciousness. They sort of exist outside of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And the witness could be communicating with them at any point in his timeline.
So from the past, from the future.
It's sort of this time way station, or this, like, yeah, you know, this... intersection, yep, of time and
it's time space time.
Yes.
Time space time.
Okay.
Yes.
Good to know. Good to know. All right. So the pallid man, he goes to the witness and he says, hey, let me, you know, trust me with the cycle, with this, and the witness says yes. And he mentions that it's his birthright.
Yeah.
And
go back to mom and
yeah. And then so that's sort of where we're left. And then meanwhile,
that's bad.
That is bad.
It seems like that it was bad that Olivia was in charge. It seems really bad that this guy is in charge.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he's you know, he's nuts, and he's you know, he's willing to, like, go with the flow and things. Like, he's less rigid, and so he's not really concerned about messing up the timeline, or which could be dangerous for everybody.
But he's devout. He really believes in the witness. Like, there is a... That's all I'm going
to
say.
Good to know. All right. So meanwhile, Cassie is at a bar. She's waiting for Cole. Cole enters, and she ordered him his drink so that it's waiting for him.
My favorite.
It's so nice. And they learn about Kyle Slade in the 70s in New York. That's the next target. That's the next primary. But... sort of unlike our previous primaries that we've gotten to know, we are afraid of Slade. He's not a good, you know, Cassie's like, look, this guy's dangerous.
He's different.
Mm-hmm. He's different. That's right. That's right. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting.
There are different types of crazy people, right?
Yeah. And he's taken to being a primary in his own unique, special way.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So the last thing that I wanted to mention is buying the bottle of whiskey. So Cole buys the bottle of whiskey and to take back. And I don't want to belabor the point of the Deacon, you know, trust issue. But I remembered on previous episode of this podcast where we were talking about Cole and Cole's arcs and changes in season two. And one of the things we talked about was Cole is very loyal, maybe to a fault. And I wrote down when he brought the whiskey back, because, you know, I was still a little worried about this Deacon situation. Can we trust him? Can we not? Even after what just happened, is this a symbol of Cole being loyal or being loyal to a fault?
I think when Deacon returns and he doesn't return with the contingent of his men to decapitate and maim Ramsay and himself, I think that's a pretty big deal. And this is from my perspective. And I think he does see that maybe Deacon is a different creature than he thought he was. And it's time to explore that route. And it's time to grab a bottle and sit down over a drink, just like he said they would never be able to, and see if they can find some common ground.
But they also have a lot of history, too, right? I mean, before that, they, you know, there was a reason... You know, Cole was drawn to the West Seven back in the day. You know, he was looking for protection, looking for probably an older brother figure beyond just Ramsay, another point of view at that time. So, you know, there's probably a part of Cole that does like Deacon.
Sure,
and Deacon clearly likes Cole. He just doesn't like Ramsay.
Yeah. Nobody likes Ramsay.
Right.
Poor Ramsay.
But, you know, it could be that, you know, yeah. Well, I don't want to get ahead of...
Yeah.
Some stuff.
So we'll look forward to them having that drink maybe one day.
He's probably just going to disinfect all his wounds.
Right.
He's probably smart, actually. All right. And then we end with Slade saying, finally, James Cole is coming for me.
Until next week.
Until next week, indeed. So that's it for this episode. Guys, thank you so much for joining
you.
Us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And for giving a little insight. Gentlemen, would you like to tell everybody where they can find you on social medias?
At Sean_Tretta.
At Aaron A. Stanford.
I am at Amanda Shule. At Terry Vitas.
And you can find me on social media at Clark Wolf. Clark with an E. Wolf with an E. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Bye.